Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that couple shouting. It's Danger and Jay. It's
Danger
and Jay.
Today's episode of Hear That Podcast Growling, presented by Visa Network, working for everyone. Paul Danger Jr., Jay Morrison of The Athletic are here working for you on our final game preview edition of Hear That Podcast Growling. We can say that confidently, Jay. This is the last game of the season. This will do it. Bengals, Rams, Super Bowl 56, Sunday. How about it?
We are inside of 56 hours to go until Super Bowl 56, and it feels like it's going to be 560 hours. It's just things move fast out here in L.A., but time doesn't seem to be one of them. It just seems like game day is never going to get here. It will, of course. It just doesn't feel like it right now. Maybe it speeds up over the weekend.
Yeah, it's funny. Like this is something that I remember in covering the Super Bowl over the years, is how long the week feels, because you spend so much time dissecting the game and talking about the players and writing the stories, and everybody's doing that. And it's just so much buildup and so much dissection to every little aspect of a game. It feels like forever until the game finally gets here. Well, when it's the Bengals, and you've already been doing that all season, if you're a fan listening to this, you've already been thinking about this since the moment McPherson's kick went through in Kansas City, it feels exponentially longer and exponentially overdone. And you're just like, you almost can't think about it anymore, because it's like, okay, I've already considered the fact that Aaron Donald is going to decapitate Joe Burrow's spleen at like 3:22 in the second quarter. You've already got every detail figured out in your head of how you think this thing's going to go and every breakdown. So you get to this point and it's like, man, can we play the game? Can they just play the game? Because we've kind of done the predictive thing.
RIP to your mentions, Paul, because you just brought all the jinx and curse bros out. How could you say that? You're going to speak it into existence.
Look, jinx and curse bros, RIP to them, because it's been a rough month and a half for jinx and curse bros around Cincinnati. Okay. Those have all gone by the wayside. I don't think any of us have the power to hold up a jinx or a curse against Joe Burrow at this point. The man, he kills all of them in one fell swoop, if there's anything we've learned. And we'll get into Joe Burrow and his hold that he has on the NFL right now in a minute. And we got a bunch of stuff to get to. Chris Collinsworth, I have him and Al Michaels, who will be calling the game, but Collinsworth in particular talking about calling this game from Cincinnati, or being from Cincinnati and calling this game, and his view of that, and that he had the comments that came out about him talking about Ja'Marr Chase, but there was a lot more to it than that on his conference call this week, and I wanted to bring you some of that. We have Andrew Hawkins, a favorite of mine, who I went over to see at the NFL Network availability yesterday, talking about the view from that 11 to 15 group watching this. The fight with Jalen Ramsey and AJ Green, who he's very, very close friends with AJ Green still, and just his view of this Bengals team. He has a very unique one, and I thought said some really interesting stuff. And so Andrew Hawkins will be here later. And then I have a conversation with Robert Mays that was on the Athletic NFL Football Show. And Jordan Rodriguez was also on that show. If you're not a subscriber to that, please do. If you don't follow that, please go follow that. You can get all the Bengals and Rams conversation there. But we're going to bring a portion of that conversation just directly to you as listeners of HTPG. With that conversation that we did yesterday. So those are all coming. We have a bunch of run passer boots. You guys submitted some. Of course, we will have our Bengals growler bet. And I think we decided let's give people a chance to be extra happy and try to win a growler bet on the day of the Super Bowl. So we've got that one. And of course, we will end with our predictions for Sunday's game. There are a million great stories up on the site. Jay, you have a great story on Lou Anarumo. Weird uncle, mad scientist, every name you can come up with. And some really, I love the anecdote about the Kansas City game in there where he basically went in at halftime, right, Jay, and just said, "You guys got any ideas? Because let's hear them."
And they did. And it were. I mean, that was a big part of holding them to 3 points. This was the regular season game. I think they will not admit it, but I do feel like that was the plan all along to draw. It wasn't just because they were getting their doors blown off in the championship game that they switched to that 8-man rush or dropping 8 guys and going to a 3-man rush. It feels like that was the plan all along, and they were waiting to unveil it until after halftime so the Chiefs would have a harder time to adjust. But that's who Lou has been all year. Whether he is coming up with his own halftime adjustments or crowdsourcing them from his players, there's just this unique ability they have, and they've been among the league's best defenses in the second half since the bye. And a lot of that is because of his ability to adapt with what's being thrown at him and the player's ability to recognize it and make the changes necessary.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's kind of a big part of this game is can Lou Anarumo continue to be this befuddling wizard that he has been for quarterbacks, you know, I mean, and credit to the players who are out there making the plays, but you know, he has really found ways to make all the adjustments that you need to make as the year has gone on. And can he do that to Matt Stafford the same way he did it to Mahomes, the same way he was able to do it to Ryan Tannehill, and really at the end of the day, the same way he was able to do it against Derek Carr. And, you know, it's remarkable that we're talking about that, considering where we were a year ago with Zach's back, Lou's back, run it back, right? Like, feels like forever ago. But, you know, the thought that unbelievable he wasn't the fall guy for 625-1, and here he is the reason, one of the big reasons they're here in the Super Bowl. Great story there. Speaking of great stories, John Greenberg and Brody Miller, who you guys are probably familiar with, did an incredible story on the places that claim Joe Burrow with a million awesome anecdotes of the Burrow effect in Athens, in Baton Rouge, in Columbus, and in Cincinnati, and talking to anybody and everybody from his past. It's just an awesome story, an awesome read on sort of the power of Burrow. And as I talked about in the live room the other day, I mean, the similarities between stuff he did in LSU and here in Cincinnati are just uncanny. And these individual stories in the background of it tell it great. It's an awesome read. Cannot recommend it enough. Great work from John and Brody, who you're familiar with if you listen to this podcast. You know them really well. reminder, we're going to have a live room with myself, Jay, Jordan Rodriguez covers the Rams, Lindsey Jones, our national writer. We're all going to be in a live room that we're going to be doing that later today, this being Thursday. So come on in for that. And if you can't make it in for that this afternoon, it'll be available exclusively as Athletic Audio Plus content on the Athletic Football Show feed. So you can catch that archived later there. But we'll be breaking down everything about the game in that live room to also is our last chance to really get you totally prepped for Sunday's game. And of course, we'll have the walkout after the game from LA and all that stuff. Real quick, as far as news, not a ton. CJ Uzomah didn't practice on Wednesday. Zach Taylor said he's expected to practice on Thursday today. He remains optimistic about him. I think that's the case. You will see him out there. I mean, really, isn't it about lateral movement at this point? I mean, I think being out there, saw him doing the straight line running, doing the bike, doing the resistant band runs. But how does he look like when he first goes to make that yak move? You know, does it hold up? Does it stay strong when he tries to go laterally? I think that's really the big question remaining that they're probably going to want to get answers to at the Thursday practice.
Yeah, and it almost feels like it's more of his presence than what he can actually contribute. I mean, yes, it would be nice to have him as that check down option, but the Rams aren't going to be real worried if it's Drew Sample lining up for 90% of the snaps at tight end. But you put CJ Uzomah in there, and that it forces them to be a little more honest with their coverage. But that is a great point, because I almost laughed. There was a game in Chicago where CJ caught a pass and he tried to do this little shimmy move, and it was honestly one of the weakest attempts to shake a tackler I've ever seen in my life. And I know he was going to get roasted in film study, but he's kind of gone a different way. He's not trying to fake guys out. He's just running them over. And it seems every time he catches a pass, he breaks at least one tackle, and he's not getting these Jamar Chase type of yak, but he gets an extra 4, 5, 6 yards after every catch. And the strength of the knee is going to be a big part of that, because it's planning and driving and running through guys to get that extra yards. And you wonder if that is going to be affected with playing 2 weeks after an MCL sprain.
Yeah, and we'll see. And like you say, I don't, you know, he's not the game changer of this whole thing. I mean, it's not going to come down to him. But yeah, we'll be monitoring him on Thursday as we always do.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
You ready?
Showtime
on May 3rd. Summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I kind of wanted to take a moment here before we dive in to kind of just set the scene in LA a little bit here. I mean, we've talked about how throughout this run, it has felt in many ways regular. It has felt like it all feels the same, right? It's just another week. And I think the Bengals have done a great job of that, and us kind of following it closely, you can sense that feel of it. It all felt very normal. It was just another week, you know. It was week 19, it was week 20, and it felt that way. This is definitively, like, there is nothing that feels like another week about what's happening right now. I mean, they're out here now. It's all different. You know, all the routines are different. You know, I think the enormousness of the moment is noticeable for players. It's hard not to be. And just the total flip in insane attention that happens when you get out here. I don't know, Jay, maybe it feels different to you, but I mean, and maybe it's just being around Radio Row and the media center and the city and seeing all the Bengals faces up on every single big building in the city out here. And that makes it feel that way. But I think the whole feels like another game thing, just another week is gone.
Yeah, because it is so different. I mean, the media, there are guys that the Bengals haven't given us all year that sat in front of a Zoom screen and did 40-minute interviews. Their assistant coach, every single assistant coach has done that. And you always wonder, is there going to be enough questions for this guy to cover 40 minutes? And there is. That's how many media cover this. People are popping into those Zooms. So I think that part, the glare is what really makes it feel different for them. And Joe Burrow even kind of mentioned too, where it did, now that they were on site in LA, that yes, it feels different. He was looking forward to getting to practice yesterday, just so it would get back to more of that normal, just playing football feel. But there's so much asked of these guys, and there's no way. I mean, from they're all wearing the same sweat suit. There's so many things that are different that you can't really lie to yourself and say this is just another game. You have to feel that the magnitude of it. And I think it does help that they're sequestered out in Westwood. They're not in downtown LA. They're not seeing I went out there for their arrival, and you wouldn't know it was Super Bowl week out in that area. You don't have all those banners and all that other stuff, but you know, in the ballroom where the logos are everywhere and they have to do these Zooms, that's where it feels different. We'll see. Once they get to Sunday and actually get to the field, that's where you really wonder, does the pregame warm-up, does the whole build-up feel different, or can they stay with that mindset of treating it like just another game? Because everybody knows it's not. It's who can actually make it feel like it that's going to have the edge to come out ahead in this game.
Yeah, I think a lot of people want to make something of Super Bowl experience, and that's important. I mean, a lot of these Rams players played in Super Bowl a few years ago, really understand the dynamics of the game and that are different and how to adjust to them, and even things as simple as the longer halftime or whatever. Like, those are things that you're familiar with that you can go back to. You also have, you know, Bengals players that are going to be relying on the national championship game experience in that way, and in the feeling of those big games. I mean, because that's really where they're hearkening back to the most with their primary players. But you do have a bunch of Bengals players that have never been to this stage before. I don't see them being overwhelmed by it, but I do think that, you know, it's a sliver of the equation here. Is those first couple of drives, getting those jitters out on those first couple of drives, and then you do feel like at that point you're playing football. But you know, the kickoff, when you're out there and all the light bulbs go off and you've been thinking about this game for 2 weeks, and you know everybody is in the world that you know is watching, and over 100 million people are watching around the world, like that. I think can get in your head for a minute. I do think it goes away quickly, but it can get in your head for a minute. The one thing I talked about is, you know, I've talked about this scene a bunch, is, you know, when Bill Belichick was handing it to the Rams and McVay, there was Zach Taylor and Sean McVay and Jared Goff in that circle talking and trying to figure out the puzzle. How different it must feel, because you have games where things go sideways, but how must it different the intensity of freak out must be when things go sideways in that game compared to when it goes sideways against the Bears in week two or whatever? You know, I mean, how different that feels and the intensity of it. I think that's maybe a part of the equation too, is when things do go wrong, where's the calming influence? And that's where you turn to Joe Burrow.
Yeah. I mean, look at the national championship game a couple years ago. That it wasn't sideways, but it was getting there. That was a really rough start for LSU, for a team that had just cruised through everybody, including their semifinal win. And that you saw that poise. You saw that calming influence that you're talking about, where he just got that team settled and then finally hit the long pass, and it was like that whole team just exhaled, and then it was right back to what they'd been all along, where they just really turned it on and whipped Clemson. And I think there's other guys like that. I think Lou is like that. He is not a screamer and a yeller, and it's a very analytical approach of figuring things out when they're going sideways. And I think Zach is that same way too. I've seen him scream at officials, but I've never seen him kind of lose his mind on the sideline with players or in, you know, plays, anything like that. So I do think they have those calming presence, or people that can give that presence and kind of settle the waters if they do get choppy. Ideally, you'd like to go out and score first and just never trail. And it's kind of a pipe dream. I mentioned on our last pod, the team that scores first is 11-9 in the last 20 Super Bowls. It's even a Super Bowl champion that proves themselves as the best team all year is going to face adversity in the biggest game. And if you have a guy like Joe Burrow on your side, and let's not forget, this is Matthew Stafford's first run at this too, that more so than his skill and his dissection, just his presence and his makeup to keep things calm is one of the greatest assets they have on their side for this game.
I agree with you. And I think it has shown itself the last 3 weeks is that Zach Taylor has put together a staff of calm communicators. That's sort of it. He's looked for guys that are in his same mold, right? That's who he is as a coach. That's how he is as a teacher. And he likes to be in building relationships with people. And you look across his staff and really by extension, his quarterback and his leaders, and they almost across the board are calm communicators with a few exceptions. And that really lends itself to big games. It really lends itself to intense moments because you just continue to go through and communicate calmly the same way you do, and that keeps everybody at ease the same way that Burrow helps keep everybody at ease. You mentioned, you know, Stafford's first game. You know, we've seen him have a pretty decent run in the playoffs to this point where he's only got one or two, but he's, you know, late in the season, he was struggling and he's had rough moments. It's not like they have been world beaters offensively. I mean, this is not that he's come out there and looked like the next great thing. I mean, they in a lot of ways, they've been winning in spite of him. And you do wonder, a guy who's never played on this stage. You know, if I'm the Rams, I'm far more worried about Matthew Stafford on the big stage than I am about the young kid Joe Burrow on the big stage, right? Like, is Stafford going to crumble? And I laugh that I don't know if you saw the Gridiron Heights cartoon that they do, but which is great. The Bengals are the cool kids, which is just, you know, what is this world, right? The Bengals are the cool kids that break into this party, this cartoon party. And at one point though, Matt Stafford just picks up a blowtorch and just goes, I will go down in flames. And just, and I go back to that when I think about like Stafford, like he will go down in flames. Like when the pressure starts to mount on him, you know, you could see him making the throws that could kill him. And I, you know, that what will his need for a calming presence? How calm will he stay when adversity strikes the Rams too? Another big element of this.
My favorite part of that cartoon is at the end where it's Stafford and Joe Burrow smoking cigars. Stafford can't really handle it. And Joe's like, are you choking?
that was a particularly good one. But yeah, so there's a lot of stuff to get to this game. We've got a bunch of things we need to get to now. So let's let's go. And I want to bring you Chris Collinsworth. So Chris Collinsworth, I saw him at the bubble practice last weekend, and he kind of joked like, yeah, I know the story's already written on me. I'm going to be the biased analyst. Like I there's nothing I could do or say to this. People are going to think that, you know, they're probably going to show Collinsworth catching balls in the Super Bowls and all in the Bengals gear. So it's like, you know, but it's what an incredible cross section for this guy, a Bengals legend, going to be calling the Super Bowl on NBC. And that, but he had some interesting things to say, I thought, about the Bengals being in the Super Bowl, and the one that made the most headlines about Ja'Marr Chase, but a lot of context there. This is actually from a conference call earlier this week with Chris, with everybody from the NBC show, but Collinsworth and Al Michaels, a big part of this. I thought it was interesting stuff to bring to you, and then we'll come back and we'll run through some run passer boots.
I wanted to ask you about the Bengals and the way they've built their roster. There was some question over who they should draft this year, and a lot of people felt they should take the offensive tackle because you got to protect Joe Burrow. And that's the general line of thinking in the NFL. You got to beef up your offensive line to protect the quarterback. But the Bengals and Zach Taylor said they wanted to draft another receiver just because it gave Joe Burrow so many weapons that it almost doesn't matter necessarily who's blocking. He can get rid of the ball so quickly. What do you think of all that? And just what do you think of the way that the Bengals built around their wide receivers?
Yeah, Penei Sewell's a really good player, but he's not what Ja'Marr Chase has been this year. Ja'Marr Chase, in my estimation, is already the best receiver that I've ever seen play with a Cincinnati Bengals uniform on. And I don't say that lightly. Isaac Curtis is a dear friend of mine, and Chad Ochocinco was phenomenal during his run here. But the number of times I've seen Ja'Marr Chase catch the football and 5 or 10 yards down the field and score a touchdown without anybody tackling him, obviously, first of all, but usually nobody touching him. His catch and run skills have just been so much fun to watch this season, and I had a chance. And the bizarre part about this game is, I think for all of us, to be doing a team in the Super Bowl that we did not do on Sunday Night Football. I mean, the odds of that are not very good at all. So I literally went back and watched all the throws, all the catches, all the plays. And this group of receivers is really phenomenal, and they are a balanced bunch, with Chase obviously being the explosive guy. T. Higgins is a monster, big, strong, contested catches. And Tyler Boyd is somebody that is just a bit of a street fighter, and all the big moments and all those clutch third down conversions he's been making for this team all season long. So it was really a joy for me to go back and really get familiar with this group of receivers and this quarterback who I've told a couple of our guys already that I think he's followed by angels. Joe Burrow has escaped some moments this year that, you know, you just can't imagine. You saw a little bit of it against the Chiefs and Chris Jones in that championship game. So they're a fun watch. I don't know how much America is familiar with them because there haven't been that many primetime sort of games, but they are definitely a fun watch.
We'll take the next question from the line of Neil Bess with Newsday. Please go ahead.
Another one for Chris, if I may. I mean, aside from the, you know, you mentioned the personal meaning of this for you, over this past week, has this been kind of a chance to reconnect with former teammates? Many of you guys on, like, text chains sort of talking about what this is going to be like? What's that part of it been like for you?
Yeah, Neil, I'll say I've been kind of holed up getting ready for this game. I don't leave the basement very often. But I did go to the Bengals practice, and it was tremendous. Mike Brown is a guy that in many ways I feel like gets the short end of the stick sometimes because he's not, you know, he's not Jerry Jones. He's not a big PR guy. He's not out front and center all the time. But I went away to go play in the USFL or sign a contract, never actually played. And when the league wasn't ready or was nearing an end, I went back to the Bengals. He welcomed me with open arms. In 1988, I was sort of at the end of my career, started law school. He let me miss morning meetings to go to law school classes, and could not have been more warm and gracious when I walked into that practice the other day. So I really appreciate him. I always have. I'm happy for them. But the bizarre part about this game is that we probably, or I probably, had more relationships with the Rams than I did the Bengals. I mean, I had never met the offensive or defensive coordinator before. I'd only met Zach Taylor a couple of times before. We hadn't done one of their games, you know, so it was a weird week for me that I had to do almost my preparation with Bengals because so much more about the Rams.
We'll take the next question from the line of Mac Engel with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Please go ahead.
Guys, this is a question for Chris and for Al because you both live there. Al, I know it's been a long time, but can you speak to what the Bengals' success and specifically this run would mean to that city, because they haven't had a major championship since the Reds won the World Series in 91. What do you think it would mean to them if they actually got this done?
I'll go first, Mac. It's a great sports town. I don't have to tell you, when I, you know, was 26 years old, they going to do the Cincinnati Reds. It's the original major league team. I mean, Cincinnati is baseball. And then when the Bengals came in 1968 as an expansion team, had a lot of early success. And when I was there, I got to go to a number of Bengals games, and the town was very excited with football, with professional football. The fact that they went to two Super Bowls in the 80s was tremendous. And then, you know, through the years, it's been rough, even though they've made a lot of playoff appearances. And then finally, they get over the hump. But having spent 3 years there, I loved every moment of it. A fantastic sports town. But here's the man who can answer that best of all.
Well, I don't live in Los Angeles, but I do know that this is a big story in Los Angeles as well. But in a few weeks or months or whatever, you're going to have the Academy Awards, and you're going to have the Grammy Awards, and you're going to have, there's always the Lakers, the Dodgers, and there's always something, right? There's always the next story. In Cincinnati, you can't imagine what it's like right here, right now. The town is lit up in all orange imaginable. You turn on the nightly news, and it's the only story in some ways that is happening in this town. And I think for a Midwestern city, when they get this kind of opportunity, when they get the chance to go on the world stage in many ways for the first time in over 30 years, that it's just, there's a buzz and an excitement and a coming together for a city that can only happen when these sort of moments come along. So as happy as I am for the Cincinnati Bengals and their organization, I feel like I'm even happier for the town of Cincinnati because it really has galvanized place.
I think if Chris could have it back, he probably would be like, oh, I guess I should have mentioned AJ Green in that conversation about you know, Isaac Curtis and Chad Johnson. Maybe a mention of AJ Green, but that's neither here nor there. But what a wild thing for Chris Collinsworth, who's going to be calling the Bengals in the Super Bowl 33 years after he played in it for them. Okay, let's, Jay, you asked for some run passer boots, and you know, people came through as they always do. So we're gonna try to run through these right now on a few topics for the game. Let's kick it off. Let's roll.
Okay, yeah, thank you for everyone. Very short time frame to get them in. A lot of great submissions. A lot of really interesting ones involving announcers, involving Chris Collinsworth and what they might say or what they might show. I avoided those because we don't hear that. We would have to go back and listen to the entire game. We can't keep a track of those type of things as the game goes. So we've got a high number one, a low number one, and a what is more likely one. So the first one from Brian Burning is, what will be greater, combined field goal yardage, combined rushing yardage for all players, or T. Higgins / Ja'Marr Chase receiving yards.
All right. I don't know. I think this one's easy, personally, because of my view on how this game is going to unfold. Combined field goal yards I'm running with. I think there's going to be a bunch of field goals. I think this is going to be defenses that stand up in the red zone. I think it's going to be, you know, take every point you can get type of game. And so I'm going to say combined field goal yards I'm going to run with. I'm going to pass on Higgins Chase receiving yards. I think they'll have decent days. I think they'll get theirs a little bit. And I don't think either running game is going to do much. So I'm going to boot on combined rushing yards.
Yeah, I'm the exact same order for a lot of the reasons you said. I don't think either, even if they were playing mediocre run defenses, I don't know that we would see a lot of rushing yards in this game. And these are not mediocre rush defenses. These are really good run defenses. So I do. I think it's going to be tough sledding for Cam Akers, Joe Mixon, and the rest of anybody else that's handed a ball to run between the tackles.
What do we got next?
Okay, this one was creative from a guy with a creative name. His name's Jack, but his Twitter handle is Alpaca Death Trap. So that immediately attracted me. So thank you, Jack, for this one. This is what will be greater, but it's a small number. So will it be Bengals fourth down attempts, McPherson made field goals, or Burrow completions of 20 plus yards?
Okay. I think that this is a really good one. I have McPherson probably kicking. It's hard to say, how could it not be four field goals, but like it just feels like it has to be. So I'm gonna kind of stick with that number. It just feels right. Burrow completions over 20 plus yards absolutely could be. This could be 4-4-4. Like I could absolutely see it going that way. But I will go ahead and run with McPherson field goals. I will pass on Burrow completions of 20 plus yards, and I'll boot fourth down attempts. I do think there will be some, but I think 2-3 is probably more likely than 4 or 5. So I'll lean that way. But I could absolutely see a bunch. I mean, they're going to be emptying the tank here. So fourth downs are you know, they're going to be on the table in every way.
Yeah, the fourth downs is really a wild card. I mean, you could see there being two or three fourth down attempts on the final drive of the game. If they're behind and they have to go down and score, I mean, that's where Joe Burrow is at his best, when it's all on the line and you got to have it. So I could see them converting a couple, keeping the drive going, facing another fourth down. But I'm going to run with Joe Burrow 20 plus completions. I mean, we've seen the Pirine screen. We've seen this, and we all know what Ja'Marr Chase can do with the ball in his hands after he catches it. I don't know that he's going to be having a lot of completions with 20 air yards, but I think they're going to have a handful of completions that cover 20 or more yards. So I'm going to run with that. I'll pass on the McPherson field goals. I think he comes up short of the 4. I think it's going to be 3, which might give you a little hint on what my prediction is going to be later. And then I'll boot the fourth down conversions as well.
Okay. All right. And one more good one that's submitted.
And then this last one is from PJ91 Gonzalez. What is more likely to occur? Aaron Donald gets 0 sacks, Ja'Marr Chase gets 0 catches, or Matthew Stafford throws 0 picks?
Man, I mean, two of these are almost impossible. Most likely to happen. Stafford throwing 0 picks could definitely happen. I mean, he's a couple of his playoff games, he's already had 0 picks. He's had some clean sheets in the playoffs. You could see Stafford having a pretty good day. So I think Stafford being 0 picks is a thing that could happen. I mean, I guess Aaron Donald. I guess I'm going to say Aaron Donald 0 sacks. because I just don't see a world that Chase doesn't catch a ball in this game. Like, there's just if they got to the third quarter and Chase didn't have a catch, they would just throw a quick screen to get him involved. They would do something of that nature just to get him a touch and get him going and try to get him going. They would scheme up some things to get him going and get him into it. So, is Aaron Donald, we really think they're going to pitch a shutout on Aaron Donald? No, but as far as total, I mean, it's not impossible. You only see in a great game, Donald would have 3-4 sacks, right? Like, I mean, Chase, there's just no way. So I'm going to go stat down the line, Stafford, Chase, and then I guess I'll boot Donald.
I'm going to run with Aaron Donald. He's played 9 career playoff games, and he has sacks in 4 of them. So, I mean, in playoff games, he's more likely to not get a sack than get one now. Those games were against much better offensive lines than what the Bengals have. But sacks are – look at the streak that Trey Hendrickson went on. I mean, it happens. You have games where you can be a good pass rusher and get good pressure and not finish and not get a sack. So I think that is the most likely to happen. I would double boot Stafford picks and Chase. I know we can't do that, so I'll pass on Stafford picks. I think he's going to throw at least one, and the prop bet on that is 0.5, and I would hammer the over on that one. The Bengals defense has just been really good at getting picks, multiple picks in the last 2 games, at least 1 pick in the last 4 and 5 of the last 6. I think they're going to make that happen. And then you're right. I will boot Ja'Marr Chase getting 0 catches. I don't see a world where that happens unless he somehow reverts to training camp Ja'Marr Chase and balls are going off his hands. And there's no logical explanation for that even happening.
Yeah. All right. And one last one that you have, Jay.
Yeah. The one I came up with is who wins Super Bowl MVP, Joe Burrow, Matthew Stafford, or the field?
I'm going to run with Joe Burrow. I mean, if the Bengals win, he's just going to get it. It's like when the year that the Patriots came back from 28-3 down against the Falcons and James White had like 14 receptions for a ton of yards and like the game winning touchdown, all this. And there's Brady holding the MVP trophy. Yeah. And it's like, look, I'm not going to say that I may have had a long shot flyer on James White to win MVP for a lot of money, but that one personally irked me is all I'm going to say. but you don't forget, that's just how this thing ends up. Like the Burrow is too big of a factor, barring like Jesse Bates having 2 interceptions and one of them for a pick 6 or something like that. I mean, you almost have to assume it's going to be Burrow. So I'm going to run with Burrow. I'm going to pass on the field because I think there's a better chance that you see, if the Rams win, a defensive player, a Donald or a Von Miller or something like that, I think people will be quicker to not give Stafford the credit, if that makes sense. And so, especially if he has an interception or 2. So I'm going to actually boot Matt Stafford on this one, which is a weird thing to do because it's like typically a quarterback award, but that's where I'm going with it.
Yeah, I'm booting Stafford too. The quarterback of the team favored to win, and I'm booting him as the MVP likelihood. I'm going to run with Field just on sheer numbers. I mean, 90 of the 92 players dressed can win it. And yes, it is a quarterback award, but we have seen other players win it. I mean, if we've hinted at this, if this game plays out where Evan McPherson's kicking 3 or 4 field goals and 1 or 2 or from 50 beyond, it could be him. I mean, it was going to be Jim Breach in Super Bowl 23 until Joe Montana drives him 92 yards for the game-winning touchdown with 34 seconds left. It would just be what a crazy story if a rookie kicker won Super Bowl MVP. But again, it could be Aaron Donald. It could be Trey Hendrickson. It could be, like you said, Jesse Bates gets a pick 6, maybe 2. There's just so many possibilities that I'm going to run with the field. I'll pass on Burrow, and then I'm booting Stafford too. I don't know. It sounds crazy to be the favorite to win and be a quarterback, but I don't think that one's as likely.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
You did it. You mentioned Super Bowl 23 in 34 seconds. I mean, you know, summoning the names of Montana and the Taylor. There's a lot of the big picture of this run that is interesting. I really enjoyed the conversation I had with Robert Mays about this, which was a chance to kind of step back and see it through a broader view. And so we wanted to bring that conversation to you. So here, this is myself, Robert Mays, on Radio Row from this week. Talking about sort of just this whole Bengals big picture. And then we'll come back after that. We'll get into some props and some growler bets and predictions and all that stuff.
The Bengals are playing in the Super Bowl. So you're here.
So we've reached the point where I said I was going to be comfortable saying that sentence. I said, look, just get me to Wednesday of actual Super Bowl week and I'll be comfortable saying the Cincinnati Bengals are playing in the Super Bowl. I'm not there yet. It's still not quite real that we're talking about this team playing in the Super Bowl, but I think I can get there by Friday.
You've been obviously been on the show several times this year, and one of the reasons that we've been on each other's shows and we've had so many conversations over the last 12 months or so is that the Bengals have been fascinating in a broader sense. Yeah. You know, you wrote today in the piece that you did about their scouting staff, which we'll dig into here in a second, just about how many debates have gone on both within the Bengals building, but then just about the Bengals period. So you and I, you know, going back to April, May, had some conceptual conversations about the Bengals. I remember sitting in the press box at Paul Brown Stadium and you and I talked about just what their philosophy was and how they built this thing and what like the best version of this team was. You came on early in the season when it seemed like they were kind of outperforming expectations. At no point during any of those conversations did I think you and I would be sitting here right now, even if early in the season there was some building optimism about what this team could end up being.
No, you're right. And I think there is a moment in week 7 in Baltimore. And I'm, you know, the world of everything being captured on the sideline and mic'd up is so great because we caught the moment that Joe Burrow realized he could be here.
Yeah.
It was there on the sideline in Baltimore, and he's talking to T. Higgins, but there's a circle of people. He's talking to no one in particular. He just says it out loud. He says, if we can win this division, we can win it all. We can win the whole thing. And he walks off with that look we've all seen now.
Yeah.
And right then, it has never left me since the moment he said it that day. I wrote about it the next day. I was like, Joe Burrow just realized he can do it with this group. And they won that day 41-17. They were 5-2. And they've had fits and starts since then that have really been kind of a really interesting path. But that was when everything before that seemed like a pipe dream. And Burrow admitted it just a couple weeks ago. He said, look, before the season started, I would have said, man, it would be crazy that we would. There's no way we're going to make it to the Super Bowl with this group. He wanted to like get a winning record, get into the playoffs.
They picked the top five the last two seasons.
Yes, absolutely. But he the most optimistic I can do anything was like if we could get in the playoffs and maybe win a game and end that drought thing. That'd be great. Yet here they are. But since that moment, I don't think they have felt. That this is a pipe dream at that point, but it did take that proving ground early in the season to show that maybe they could do this.
So we're going to talk today, which I should have done at the beginning of this, about how the Rams and the Bengals got here, what their paths were to this point. And you and Jordan Rodriguez just have such an intimate knowledge of everything about these franchises, and I wanted to dig into that with you. So let's start with Joe Burrow, because if you're looking at the Bengals' just journey to this moment, and what other teams can take from it and how you can, because that's always what happens, right? How do these teams got here? What can we learn from it? In the Bengals situation, I think there's some things we can learn. I think there's some things that it's just lucking into Joe Burrow. Getting to that point when you lose, win two games the year before, you get the number one pick in a year with a transformative type of quarterback. So just walk me through, in your opinion, as someone who's covered this team for a long time, what is different now about the Bengals because Joe Burrow is there?
Belief. I mean, there was no belief forever. I mean, there was the belief that existed in the building, in the organization, in the city, was one of waiting for the other shoe to drop. What's going to go wrong now? How is this going to fail? The Bengals are just this entity they're not great corporate citizens. They're cheap and whatever. It's just a matter of time till they lose and break our hearts and whatever. Then when Burrow came, It wasn't that. It wasn't, is this the time that my heart breaks? It's no, this is the time that Joe Burrow comes out of the tunnel. And that belief has captured the team. It has captured the city. And it's not like he came in and gave a speech. It's not like, you know, I think this is, enough has been said and written and people have knowledge of now how he sort of does this. It's insane, the parallels. I was just on our Hold That podcast, the LSU podcast, with Brody Miller yesterday. The parallels between how he did it at LSU and in capturing the team, the program, the state, and how he has done it in Cincinnati, just with this very down-to-earth, hard work, but insane confidence in himself that everybody reaches onto, toughness that every person that's associated with football loves and admires and wants to follow. He's not a rah-rah guy. He's not, you know, but he has an innate, incredible, instinctual sense of people. What people need, what people want to hear, how to be a leader. He grew up the son of a coach. He understands that. And he understands how a quarterback can instill that and has done it now in two different places using the same method. And then he becomes this quirky fashion guy with the glasses, and people love how unique he is.
He's the most confident person I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's unbelievable.
And I was talking to Brian Callahan last week and for a story I'm hopefully going to write later this week, and we were discussing just, okay, how does it manifest when you have this sort of presence? Like, we can talk about it in these nebulous terms, but concretely, what do you see? And he was talking about it as earned confidence. Like, Joe has earned confidence because of the work that he puts in. And we were talking about the parallels to the Joe Burrow coming into Cincinnati situation and when he was in Denver and Peyton Manning got there, right? So obviously very different points in their career. Joe Burrow's a rookie. Peyton Manning is already one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time by the time he gets to Denver. So when Manning gets to Denver, everything changes because everyone in the organization looks at the quarterback always and says, okay, where can the quarterback take us? With Peyton, it's instantaneous. From the moment he is there, everyone in the organization looks to him as this kind of beacon. With Joe, it obviously, you have to show it. You have to prove to people that you are that guy. But it didn't take long for him to prove to people that he was that guy. So then everybody in the organization, your understanding of what is possible changes.
Yeah.
And when your understanding of what is possible changes, what you expect of yourself every day, how you come to work, it gets into the fabric of who you are. And this is how it works with all quarterbacks. But I think with this franchise who's been looking for one, Andy Dalton was what he was, right? Like, there, I think that, in my opinion, contrasting the previous version of this team that could have won a Super Bowl, like that 2015 roster, and you look at how well built it was and how complete it was, Andy Dalton was merely a cog in that machine. When you removed him and it all kind of fell apart that season, Joe Burrow is not a cog in the machine. He is the engine that drives this entire thing. And that distinction, I think, you can feel how different that is.
Yeah. Because nothing creates true belief like the quarterback.
Yes.
Because he is the only one that can really change everything on the field. You can have all the A.J. Greens and Mo Sanus and Marvin Joneses and Tyler Eifert and Andrew Whitworths. I could go on and on that team.
Team was awesome. They were so good.
They were so good. You can have all those guys you want. If you don't have the quarterback to really drive you all the way, it's really, really, really hard to do. You know, Burrow came in, and because, like we say, he has such a good sense of human dynamics, he was reticent to be the leader. You had AJ Green here, and here's Geno Atkins, and guys that have been here for 10 years.
And
he knows, I'm not going to come in here and tell these guys what to do. They knew, for him and all the guys they have now since added over these 2 years that they thought were really good leaders from winning programs and winning other winning teams in the NFL, to truly take over and change the culture, they had to clear the decks. And that was really the biggest part of this offseason that happened that people don't talk about. They have a lot of respect for those players. They love those players, but they knew this new generation could never take over if Giovanni Bernard and these guys were really still there, because everyone would say, okay, it's your locker room. Now, it's Joe Burrow's locker room. It's Von Bell's locker room. It's Jesse Bates' locker room, because they feel like they have ownership of it. And that has really been what's taken off this culture that, no joke, I have never seen anything like it.
So I want to go back to what you said a little bit earlier about the Bengals are cheap, right? Because for a long, long time, you'd have conversations with other people in the league. I remember I was in Minnesota the day that AJ Green got hurt on that piece of shit college field that they were playing that training camp practice on.
Welcome Stadium in Dayton. Yes, 14-year-old turf.
Yeah. Yes. So I was having a conversation with the coach in Minnesota, and we were talking about what the Bengals would do that year. Because it's like, all right, well, this is over. right? Like this version of it, whatever it was with AJ Green and Andy Dalton is over. Do they try to trade Andy Dalton? What do they do? And he stopped me and he was like, you're ascribing normal thinking to the Bengals. And he wasn't even being mean.
No, it's not.
He wasn't even being
they
mean.
They operate differently.
He was like, it is just a different, they do things differently there. And that's how it always was. And I want to talk about kind of the nuances of that because it's not a negative or positive value kind of proposition that you're talking about. It's just a different way of doing it. They were successful for a while. They went to the playoffs consistently. They won a lot of games under Marvin Lewis. I want to talk about how things have shifted in terms of the way they do business mm-hmm. over the last 3 years. When they opened the checkbook in the spring of 2020 mm-hmm. and they signed DJ Reader to that deal and they signed Trey Waynes to that deal, it was shocking. Because for years, the free agent classes were, let's re-sign Bobby Hart. Like, that was what the free agent classes
looked
like.
Don't do that to Bengals fans,
but it's
Robert.
True. But that's what it was. For years, that's
yes.
what it was.
Yes.
So I want to talk about why, how that change happened. Why yeah. do you think that change in philosophy and change in methodology happened? And who do you think is responsible for it? And when did it start?
I think it started when Zach Taylor showed up.
Okay.
I mean, I think there was a sense of when they ended the Marvin Lewis era, you know, there's... So much of what we're talking about, cheapness is the word that gets used. There's a sense of old school family loyalty that exists with Mike Brown and the organization. They just have a sense of taking care of the people that they've brought in, and they don't like the cutthroat, nasty, impersonal, faceless nature of the current NFL business structure. They still don't like that. I think when Zach Taylor came in and essentially convinced them, and not that Duke needed it, but I think Duke Tobin maybe came a little bit more to the forefront of willing to go that route was...
Because his team is in his fabric, right? Yeah, he's been here for 20 years.
Duke Tobin had never sat in front of us until the day they had a press conference announcing Zach Taylor. They wanted Duke next to Mike Brown on the podium. This was his guy. This was his hire. This is the first time we're putting Duke Tobin out here as no longer, we're not going to say the title, but you can take de facto off GM. It should have been done 10 years ago, but that's fine. This is us saying, here he is at the press conference between Mike and Zach. This is him, right? And we're turning it over. What Zach Taylor and that staff brought in was, look, guys, you're not going to win in this league if you don't get into free agency. Draft, develop, and retain is the ultimate model. Everybody knows that. But where we're at, where this, if you're going to gut this
thing.
They
were the worst drafting team in the league for 5 years.
For 5 years. But I would say the best drafting team in the league the 5 years prior to that.
Yes.
09 to 13 was one of the greatest runs you'll ever see.
100%.
14 to 18 was one of the worst. It was incredible. But that
happens, right?
In the NFL, it cycles.
Every team is going to have fallow periods when it comes to drafting. The Seahawks were the greatest drafting team of all time. They built the defining team of a decade of football because of like three drafts from 2010 through 2012. And then inevitably, because no one is good at this, you're going to have those little dips.
Yeah.
And the Bengals had to supplement that with outside players, but they were never willing to do that before. And I think that if you look at the way they've built this defense, if they don't change the way that they think, if they don't say we're going to be able to go out, we're willing to go outside the building to add talent, they're not here because the defense is built entirely through free agency outside of two guys.
Yeah.
And Logan Wilson, I guess, is a third. I mean, Jermaine Pratt. So like maybe four guys. You have four homegrown guys and the rest are free agents. It's insane.
Yeah. Well, I think there was always maybe a willingness to do it if they had to, but they never felt like they had to. I always said they overvalued their own players. I don't think they ever really properly understood the market of their own guys because it's like they were like their kids. They loved them more than anybody else could. And it resulted in things like Bobby Hart's that you mentioned in Of the World. There were a lot of those. And I think it takes somebody else coming in from the outside.
It's a great point.
Not valuing these guys the same way and understanding what else you can get to come in and reset it. The thing for me going forward will be, and not to spin it forward past Super Bowl, but is like, will they now go back to now these are our guys? And how long will they be trying to recreate 2021 over and over again the same way they spent 16, 17, and 18 trying to recreate 15?
Yeah.
And you at a certain point, you have to move on and see the proper value. I don't know how much they will. I don't think we'll see 2-year spending sprees in free free agency like we just saw from them again.
You don't want them.
No.
You don't want to
do
that.
Them, and they don't need them. And so I don't, you know, I don't think we'll see that. That said, they the willingness to go out there and do it with the success rate that you just don't see in free agency is truly a remarkable thing. Everything had to fall almost perfectly into place for them to be in this spot, and it has.
I feel it. So looking at just the overall structure of the organization, this is just knowledge you have that very few people do. My understanding is that some of the family members, Katie Blackburn,
is, so
I was trying to think of the names. Some of the family members associated with the Brown family, some of the younger ones have gotten more say and have become more prominent in the way the organization runs. Do you think that's influenced kind of whatever modern feel the Bengals have started to develop, just the way that the voices are in that building?
More on the marketing side.
Okay.
So, like, I think operationally, I mean, Mike Brown sort of pushed the daily day-to-day operations to the side a decade ago.
Yeah.
I mean, this has been Duke and Katie and Troy Blackburn, Katie, his daughter, and then Paul Brown as well, his son, have been kind of running the show for a long time on the football side. What is interesting has happened, because only can happen in the Bengals, is Elizabeth Blackburn, Katie's daughter, who is in her late 20s.
That's what I'm thinking.
Has come in and headed as director of strategy and engagement and said, Grandpa, look, your franchise, no one, it's you need to figure it out. You need a ring of honor. You need to have social media. Your game day needs to be a show. This is entertainment. Mike Brown is Paul Brown. Football is all that matters. And the stadium seats will be green and because it's the color of the field, and we're going to play the game, and everyone's going to think that that's the entertainment, and they're going to leave after that. And that's what football is. No. And here's the thing. Mike Brown said this before the season started. He said, you know, Elizabeth came in and got all these things, and everybody else in the building is scared of me except for her. She is probably the only person on earth that could get Mike to finally come around on all of these things, because you can't say no to your granddaughter.
Yeah.
And that and it's so people said, well, she's so young. That's a job that people work their whole careers and never get to. How can this 20-some-year-old person come in? And when actuality, she's the only person on earth that could do that job and have had the success they have to re-engage, reconnect with a family base that didn't just have dislike them, was apathetic towards them at this point. Whatever, Bengals. And now it's the exact opposite. They've never been more connected. The city's never been more alive in support of the Bengals. And so much of it is the team, is Burrow, but is also aligning everything else so when the moment comes, they're properly prepared to be really engaged.
And it's just it's funny because you need that outside perspective, right? Even though she's in the family, it is a new perspective. And it's the same. You forget how long Marvin was there.
16
years. You just forget how long he was there. And you just saying, like, Zach getting there and being someone who came from somewhere else, had a different viewpoint, said, maybe we should try this, some of this stuff. You can feel how different that is. And the reason this all works is the Burrow side of this, getting Ja'Marr Chase with the 5th overall pick, and the way they've built the defense. And I think that is, as I step back and I think about this, and I think what aspects of this are replicable, what are things that you can take away? The thing I keep coming back to is looking at the types of players they went after in free agency on defense, where the price ranges are in those guys. There is a Chidobe Awuzie and a Von Bell available in every single free agent class. You can find those guys. You have to pay a premium for a DJ Reader when you would chase a guy like that, or a Trey Hendrickson. But there are aspects of this where the way they've built this thing, the personalities, how smart those guys are, the way that's all come together, to me, that's the most fascinating part of what this team is, because it doesn't require getting the number one overall pick in a year where the greatest college quarterback of the last 15 years comes out.
You know, it's the interesting conversation that I've seen, whether in the comments or responses to the scouting stories. Oh, yeah. How about this? You luck into Joe Burrow because you stink so much. Yeah. Absolutely, obviously, like this isn't happening. We're not talking about these slick moves if they went 7-10 with some other quarterback. But so yes, there is a total luck element to building that. But you have to get out of the way. You have to understand how to let Joe Burrow do his thing, what leadership looks like, and what he needs to complement him. Let's not act like it was like, oh yeah, draft Burrow, draft Chase. Like, we didn't spend 6 months talking about Chase versus Sewell and how to build this thing, and the decisions are, every spot is its own decision, its own right. So yes, you get Burrow. A lot of people have gotten good quarterbacks. How many times has it come across like this sometimes, but we haven't seen anything like this.
And the defense took them here. Like, let's just be honest. Like, the defense is the reason they're here, because the way the defense has played over the last
step,
3 weeks.
The step this team was supposed to take this year of making the playoffs and maybe winning a game is augmented by the defense. They're here because the defense took them that extra 2 rounds, because they weren't good enough offensively yet because of their line to get to the next step 100%. To carry them. The defense carried them the rest of the way.
Something I like to ask somebody who covers the team day to day, it's just, who are we not talking about enough? Like, who are the unsung heroes, in your opinion, of this Bengals season that are, at its core, a couple of the reasons that they're here but aren't on my mind?
Sam Hubbard.
That's a really good one.
Look, when they drafted Burrow, the year they were going to draft Burrow, Hubbard and Burrow are great friends since back in their Ohio State days together. Hubbard goes to Miami, Super Bowl's in Miami that year. Burrow's doing the rounds as the Heisman guy. They hung out all week. They went like fishing together and hung out together and started to build the literal core. There's a reason that the two of them went out for the coin toss in Kansas City. The literal core of the next generation started, and Hubbard was a big part of it. They've kind of viewed the two of those guys as like defense, offensive, really quiet, leadership, hardworking, does everything the right way every day, relentless in practice, relentless in meetings. We want both sides of the ball to be based around that, to look like that. We want guys that play like that and think like that. Those two, you know, Hubbard is the other side of it. He doesn't get a lot of shine because he's not really a pass rusher. He picks up scraps that is created.
He does weird roles. Like, he's a spy in certain situations. Yeah. Like, it just, they in the Oakland game, they had him lined up off the ball. I mean, the sack he had, he was lined up as an off-ball linebacker. It just, he plays this kind of, I don't know, there's not a lot of rigidity to the role that he plays. He does a lot of different things for them.
Yeah, well, and he's a run stopper, like a great run stopper. And so there's a selflessness to, like, he's not kind of this, when you think of great edges, but he is really the personality that he plays with, and the tenacity and kind of energy that he plays with feeds everyone. And that's kind of what's defined that defense, right? Flying after the ball, always chasing a pass when it gets deflected and able to be there to get the pick. It's been a big part of what they do as a whole. So, I mean, I think he's probably one that I would point to.
What aspect of this, when it comes to the city, the fan base, watching how Cincinnati has reacted to this team, will stick with you the longest?
As much as this season, on a national perspective, has been about Burrow and everything he is and has become, and the fun Cinderella story of the Bengals, for those inside the city, I grew up there. I understand the dynamics of the team and the city probably as well as anybody. This season will always be about this city coming alive. It will always be about this thing that has been created during this run, because it will never be like this again.
Yeah.
You know,
you only
get one first time breaking through with the new group and the fun new guy. And they've been, it's not just the Bengals. The Reds last advanced in the postseason in 1995. Nobody, there is a generation of Cincinnati sports fans that have never experienced success in the postseason, ever.
Yeah.
And this year has been so special for that group of people who are 30, right? Who are just now learning what it's like when the Cincinnati, it's a great sports town, but it's just been so beaten down, to now suddenly the fabric of it, of how they define themselves, is changed because they believe that Joe Burrow is going to come out of the tunnel now. And it just doesn't feel like you're waiting for Carson Palmer's injury or Kenyon Martin's leg or Andy Dalton's thumb or Johnny Cueto's oblique or any of millions of things that have killed great runs in the past. It's like they're washed away and you're starting over, and you now understand that being a sports fan's fun.
Yeah.
It's not something that you beat yourself up about and complain about ownership every week. It's fun. It can create unbelievable moments and connections between fans, between fathers and sons and daughters and friends and neighbors. And the videos that have come out of all of these special events have been like, just to me, that's been the story. That has been the story of what's happened inside of the city of Cincinnati, whether they win Sunday or not. I mean, no one can ever take that away. They may come back. It'll never feel like this again. It'll never be as special as this has been for the city, and that's what I'll take away.
I totally understand that. These are the moments, and these are the reasons that being a sports fan is worth it.
Yep.
It is for these sorts of payoffs. It's for these sorts of connections. It's to be able to enjoy it. We said it earlier this year. It's like, this is why you endure all that shit. This is why you go through it, is for this.
Yeah.
It'd be great to win. It'd be so special if they won for all of those people. But even to get to this point is pretty remarkable. Paul, it's so great to chat with you. It always is. Sincerely appreciate the time. And we'll see you the rest of the week here.
Looking forward to it, Robert.
All right. It was great joining Robert on the Athletic NFL Football Show. Again, if you're not subscribed to that on iTunes or Spotify or whatever, getting that in your feed, you should. It's awesome stuff. And, you know, it's a great chance if you want to go on and listen to that full episode, you can hear the full conversation and the conversation with Jordan Rodriguez covering the Rams to get a full sense of the Rams side of thing before the Super Bowl. That episode is up there. And you know, we're glad we could bring you that portion of it here on HTPG. All right, Jay, everybody loves props. Everybody loves throwing a few wagers down. And this is probably going to be the most betted on Super Bowl because everybody's got such easy access to it. God bless America. And so let's pick a few of our favorites for people to maybe get in on the right side of. I have my top three favorite Super Bowl prop bets that I like. And you have picked the three that you like the most. Let's run through them one at a time. Jay, you start with what you've got first. Your number one.
My number one is Joe Mixon over 93.5 scrimmage yards. This game could look a lot like that Tennessee game where Burrow's under a lot of pressure and Mixon had 6 catches in that game. His last 2 playoff games, he's had 115 and 105 scrimmage yards. And if it plays out where the Bengals get the lead and they're running him a lot in the fourth quarter, the rushing yards could be higher than expected. I feel like this is going to be a Joe Mixon game, whether it be design passes to him or check downs because Aaron Donald's breathing down Joe Burrow's neck. I think 93.5 is almost a gimme. Don't go bet money. Come find me if you lose. But I really, really like that one.
Man, I would not have gone there. That doesn't feel like a gimme to me. Well, I think that's going to come down to Joe Mixon busting a screen. I fully expect to see lots of screens and stuff to keep them off balance on early downs, particularly early in the game. And they've busted some screens in recent weeks. And so will they be able to break one out? Will it come to Mixon? I mean, P. Ryan had one of the big ones against Kansas City. So that would be the game changer for that bet. So you're betting on them doing it again for basically, you know, third, fourth week in a row, whatever it is now. They've had really good screens going. So that's probably the side of that because it ain't going to come from rushing yards. I mean, maybe he can break one out, but I wouldn't feel as gimme as you do on that one. My gimme is Joe Burrow rushing yards over 11.5. If we know anything about what we've seen of Burrow lately, what we've seen of him in big games in college, when it's pull out the stops time, and he's done this so much more, it's get out there, scramble, and run. He's going to be running for his life. He's going to scramble. 11.5 yards, I mean, even if he just avoids 3 or 4 sacks and turns those into a 1 or 2 yard gain, not counting when he goes and busts 1 for 5 or 10 yards into some space because he's unaccounted for or more in one run, even he could pull that off. That was such a low, jarringly low number for me. I think the gimme bet is Burrow rushing yards over 11.5.
That was my number two. So I'm glad now that I get to pick one of the other ones I really liked.
What's another one?
My next one, this is one of those yes or no's. And this is, you can get it, the yes, at plus 230. And it's will the Bengals score in every quarter? And it sounds hard to do against a good defense in the Super Bowl. The Bengals have scored in every quarter this postseason, including overtime. So 13, going back to the regular season, it's 16 quarters in a row that they've scored in 24 of 25. I think there's great value, even if it's just McPherson kicking a field goal. We know how good they are in the Morrison minutes at the end of the first half. I think there's a really good chance that they'll come up with at least one score in all 4 quarters, and you can get it at plus 230.
That's a nice value. I that 24 out of 25 number is something I was not really totally aware of. You don't notice it as you go through it, especially because there's so many field goals involved. But great point. That's a good one there. Another one with some value is I'm surprised that they had this as the one that was getting the juice at plus 100 instead of Joe Burrow at minus 140. First interception thrown. Matt Stafford getting plus 100. You're getting juice on that. So, hey, I mean, Joe Burrow's has hardly thrown an interception. Like, he doesn't really do it anymore. I mean, he's had the bad luck one. And he had the one in Kansas City and then the one off the hands of Samaje Perine. So they've happened. But for the most part, he's been so secure with the ball, so good at that. The idea that Stafford wouldn't be the one to throw the interception, I think just even for a little bit of value that you get there is a good play because it really feels like he'll be the one. It could be wrong. Could be pressure and then a ball gets tipped or whatever. I'm sure that's what they're banking on with this line, but I like first interception thrown Matt Stafford at plus 100.
My next one, and it's a 50-50 prop if even one happens for them to get it. But I just love this one. Will there be a two-point conversion? And you can get yes at plus 260. And the reason I love this is we've talked about this. We've mentioned so many times. You have two great kickers in this game. I feel like there's going to be a lot of field goals. And when that happens, that sets up for 14-6, 21-13, 28-20 type of margins where if somebody scores, it's going to make sense that you go for two. And two creative play callers with – we saw the play the Bengals trotted out with Trent Taylor to hit the two-point conversion against the Chiefs. I feel like there is a really – really good chance that we see a two-point conversion in this game. And plus 260 is – that's a lot of value for that, – that almost feels more like a plus 100, a plus 140 type of bet. But they've got it at plus 260, so I love this one.
That is a good one. I will round it out with Chase targets over 8. They are not going to hold back on throwing the ball to Jamar Chase. Like, it won't matter that Jalen Ramsey's on him. We've seen games where Chase hasn't had a ton of targets. But in this game, especially how Burrow likes to rely on just throwing it to Chase when under pressure with the quick hits or whatever, you know, and they're going to have a desire to get him involved. They're going to be scheming targets for him. I would be stunned if we saw a world – not that Chase would have huge numbers. I mean, the big numbers may come from Higgins or wherever. I think they're going to throw it a lot still, and I'd just be stunned to see a world where Chase was involved to a point that he didn't get 8 targets in this game. And maybe it's possible, but I really like Chase targets over 8. I think he's going to be heavily involved in this one.
I do too.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I really do like that one, and you take into account maybe they do some of those jet sweep pop passes where you get a free target that way. It looks bleak at halftime. Maybe they do start hitting Boyd and Higgins early and let Jalen Ramsey do his work on Chase. But if the Bengals are behind, he's easily hitting 8. And if they're winning and succeeding and playing really well on offense, it's going to be because Jamar Chase is involved. So both ways, however this game plays out, it feels like he can get to that 8.
All right. You mentioned Jalen Ramsey. I know Bengals fans have no love lost for Jalen Ramsey for what happened in Jacksonville with AJ Green. And one of the craziest things I've ever seen on a football field just because of who it was. But I talked to Andrew Hawkins. I walked down to the JW Marriott where he was doing an NFL Network availability, and nobody else could get down there because it was too far to go. So I basically was able to kind of sit down with him the whole time and chatted it up. So he really interesting stuff, and Hawk is so good, and he's just become a mogul. Like, he's so big time now with what he's done in media, done in his own way. And, you know, he's kind of, he's feeling the Bengals and talks about being a little bit of emotional watching this, because one of the reasons he loved going to Cleveland was because of that underdog nature of being a part of a team that can break it through. And the 11 to 15 group, watching this group, I just find kind of fascinating, because they all thought this was going to be them, the one to do this and flip the city on its head, and they never did. And so it was a fun conversation with Andrew Hawkins. I want to bring that to you, and we will come back with Growler Bet and predictions and all that good stuff. So here's from NFL Network, former Bengal and Brown, Andrew Hawkins.
You guys, with your group chat, all of you guys, AJ, Mark, everybody, what's this like for you guys? You guys thought this was going to be you that made this run, that set the city on fire.
Uh-huh.
Is it weird? Are you guys, I know you're probably happy for the city, but is it odd seeing that, God, I wish this would have been the one that we would have, does it bring those old feelings back?
I think anybody who hasn't played in the Super Bowl wants to play in the Super Bowl, right? And especially when you see Cincinnati doing it. Yeah, I mean, I haven't talked with the guys about it, you know, collectively. But I feel like, of course, they would love to have been a part of the team that made that happen. But I also know that they're, like, extremely excited for the city, right, and the team, is because one thing that I think about Cincinnati is there's such a, you know, because there's only six scouts, right, and because the market is probably one of the smaller markets, you know, in the NFL, and there is such a familial feel to playing for Cincinnati that all of us guys have played a lot of places. Like, you know, Marvin Jones has played with like three teams now. Mohamed Sanu is, you know, played in Super Bowl with the Falcons, right? Like, we all still feel like Bengals, right? And it's because, you know, you're at this place together where you really truly grow up. You know, you get to know a lot about yourself, that you go out and, you know, perform in other places as well. But it's like you'll always be Bengals because it was such an integral part of our careers. And, you know, we were setting out to do something nobody expected. I think we were better than people expected at the times I was there, but at the same time, it was like, man, how cool would it have been to be this team and do what they did now back then, right?
You guys, I mean, even then, you guys probably always felt like the forgotten team in the league, right? I mean, even though you guys were good and you were there every year in the playoffs, it was like people would constantly just kind of brush it aside. That's kind of the crazy thing about this team is like they've kind of, that still existed for them, but they just blew right through.
Yeah, they broke the ceiling on it, man. And that's, I mean, we had home playoff games that I don't even know if we sold out, you know what I mean? And so, again, going from the little kid that was rooting for the Bengals in the middle of Steeler country with 2-win and 3-win seasons to go into the playoffs, that was like the Super Bowl to me. Like, I couldn't believe I was on a Bengals team that was in the playoffs. And, you know, to see them take the next step of really blowing this out, man. I was a kid. I remember trying to buy Bengals gear anywhere and everywhere, and you couldn't find it. You could not. I'm telling you, like, we'd go on vacations here, and obviously being in Pennsylvania or anywhere, like, you could not get a Bengals T-shirt because they just didn't put it. It's really cool. I cannot believe it. It's wild walking in downtown L.A. and see Bengals
everywhere.
Everywhere, right? Like, the center of the football universe, man. That is such a damn cool thing that, you know. Yeah, I mean, I was a little emotional when they won that Chiefs game. I could not believe it. Like, it's like,
do you think that's partially just the attitude that Burrow brings off? Like, because you had a ton of good Bengals teams back in the day, you were consistently making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But you're right, that type of feeling wasn't around. Is it just following the quarterback and how swaggy he is?
Yeah, I think that I think there is a building process to these things, right? I remember in 2011, this is when Carson refused to come to camp, right? He was trying to get out of it. Andy Dalton was the second round pick. I remember, I think his first who was his first game? Maybe the Lions?
Dalton's first game?
Yeah, preseason game.
Oh, preseason. Oh,
preseason
yeah.
game.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was horrendous. And I think he actually went out with an injury. And it was like, oh, man, I don't know what we're going to do as a team. AJ was a freak from day one.
Yeah.
You know, but I think, like, publicly it was like, yeah, no one was expecting Dalton to be, you know. And then I think that kind of, there was no pressure on us. And we're like, yeah, let's just go play. And we were a playoff team when no one expected it. And then we get Marv and Mo and some other pieces. And then we go to the playoffs again. And then a third time. And then they continue to go. And I think after a while they understood, well, this is a pretty good team. And it was surprising. And there was like some level of, man, they've done better than what we expected. But it's like you still want to get over that hump. Well, I think with this team, we were young and we didn't know what we didn't know. We didn't know we weren't supposed to go to the playoffs that year. That we got rid of Ocho and Terrell Owens and Carson Palmer, and somehow we were going to be better. Like, we didn't know that. No one expected it. We were too young to understand that we're not supposed to be in that position. Well, I think there's some elements of this team now that they don't know what they don't know. They don't know that they weren't supposed to be in the Super Bowl, that they weren't supposed to have this success at their early age. But at the same time, there was enough of a history to know that going to the playoffs wasn't enough because of the teams that we had. Like, so the success measure wasn't going to the playoffs anymore. It's like, hey, we gotta break beyond. Now, if they won that one playoff game and lost to the Titans, it'd still be a celebration in Cincinnati. We got over the hump. If they lost the AFC Championship to Patrick Mahomes, it would have been like, man, but imagine what our future is. And now here they are. So the expectation is going to climb, and you're going to have this team in place, and it's going to be awesome next year to hear all the preseason picks of people saying, well, you got to pencil the Bengals back into the Super Bowl, right? And the expectation grows, and it's just going to be, this is going to be a wild ride for everyone, an exciting ride, but it's going to be really cool to be a part of.
Let me give you one chance before I go.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're close with AJ.
Yeah.
Jalen Ramsey is not beloved in Cincinnati for what happened yeah. with AJ. As a friend of someone who was in that,
yeah.
Do you forgive Jalen? What's your opinion to that incident? Is that stuff that happens in football and everybody moves on, or is that like, man, that's just never, I'm not gonna ever be able to wash that out?
Yeah, I think it just happens and people move on. I can guarantee you, AJ does not care.
Yeah.
You know AJ, man. Yeah. I mean, you talk about the most mild mannered person on planet Earth. He was the most relatable and down to earth superstar athlete I have ever been around, right? So I'm sure he doesn't give a damn, to be honest. But that's just football, man. That's a part of it. Like, yeah. We are in a game where you run full speed into other people and you hit them. It's not like a, you know, we hate to see injuries, you hate to see, but there's a mindset you have to get into to play the game of football. And I think that mindset is why Jalen Ramsey is the best corner in the National Football League, you know? And it's like, you can't take that away. Otherwise, you probably take away what he is as a player. But I can promise you, AJ don't care. And I would imagine Jalen doesn't give a damn either. This is just how it goes, man.
Still one of the most stunning things I've ever seen on a football field in my life.
Yeah.
Went down, though.
I was stunned because of who. It could have been any other receiver in the league. It would have been like, oh, okay, cool. That's crazy that happened. Because it was AJ in it, I'm like, dude. I've never even seen him raise his voice.
Yeah.
I've known him for a decade plus now, you know? So, yeah, it was a crazy moment in history for AJ Green.
All right, great to catch up with Baby Hawk, who had all kinds of great name drops as part of the conversation. He was talking about Carl Pickens and Darnay Scott. Of course, his brother, Artrell, played with a lot of those guys in the 90s, and he was a Bengals fan because of that as he was coming up. But, man, what an unbelievable story he has been from, you know, living on the couch and playing in the CFL to getting a shot. I mean, he was asked a bunch about the scouting staff, and he's like, you know, maybe he's speaking from personal experience, but they found me. You know, and they gave me a real chance. I was some dude who'd been living on the couch and was on a reality show and played in the CFL, and they gave me a real chance to come in and play, and it wasn't a fake one. And it's like, that's a big part of how they find people, and how they're willing to give people they have some belief in real shots. And that's a big part of why he's even here today, and why at one point, you know, he got that big contract with the Browns. But great to catch up with Hawk. All right, Jay, here we go. Bengals growler bet, Super Bowl growler bet. As if you need anything else to have weighing on you as this game plays out, we are going with an old favorite. You know, when you, what do, Jay? When you get to the big game, you do what got you there. You do something that you, and this is one of our favorites, one that we've utilized, and it feels particularly fitting for what we expect this game to be. So you can send your submissions, of course, to hashtag Bengals Growler Bet on Twitter. You can at me and Jay if you'd like that, but make sure you have hashtag Bengals Growler Bet, or to email to me, pdaner@theathletic.com, with growler in your subject header somewhere. This week, for the 50 West beer, the delicious 50 West beer. And shout out to 50 West, free ice skating going on Monday if you're looking for something to do with your kids because they're not in school. Bengals growler bet, time of the game of the last lead change. We have done this one before. You need to be within 3 seconds of the time of the game of the last lead change. Now, that is in the final minute. If you're going to pick the final minute of the game in regulation, you need to give me the length of that play. So if it's a McPherson at the gun, you know, you can say 4 seconds or 3 seconds because it's the snap of that play. However, you need to give me the length if you choose to go in the final minute. Otherwise, you got to be within 3 seconds in either direction of the snap of the play that is the last lead change in the game. Jay, what do you got?
I mean, it feels like it has to work out this way. And by the way, I wanted to go sadistic nun on you guys and make this really hard. And Paul smited me down and said, no, we need to make this easy. Let's let people win some free beer. So I do really like this one. And I guess I need a clarification, because if the game is tied, that, are we counting that as a lead change, a game-winning field goal, even if that team has never trailed the entire game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. A game-winning field goal from us, a tie score, is we would count.
It's a lead change. All right. Then I'm going to go 3 seconds remaining in the game. McPherson from 49.
Yeah, I mean, it feels that way, doesn't it?
It does.
It's hard not to. So I will just say, let's go to predictions, and I will offer my answer in predictions. Jay, what's your prediction?
So that is McPherson at the gun from 49. The snap will happen at 03 seconds, or at 3 seconds. The Bengals have won 5 straight games when I picked against them. So maybe I'm going to make you guys mad by doing this, but I really do think there's something special brewing here. And that field goal from McPherson is going to win it for the Bengals 23-20. It'll be his third field goal of the game, and he will be in the running for MVP.
So here's the thing on this one. I cannot get past that we have talked for weeks, months now, as we're into mid-February, about how the other team's pass rush is going to kill these Bengals. And we name the pass rusher every time, right? Jeffrey Simmons or Chris Jones or Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue and all, you know, all, we did this over and over again. We've done it for weeks. We've done it for months. And whether they got 9 sacks or whether they got 2 or none, whatever it was, Burrow and the Bengals have found ways to scheme and Houdini their way out of that being a factor, at least a debilitating factor. And Tennessee pushed them to their limits, without doubt. But their ability to play complementary football and overcome that weakness has been the case all year. So to me, that is the factor that everyone points to of why the Rams will win this game and why that will be a difference. But I don't see that. I see the same thing I see when I look at any NFL game. The Bengals have the better quarterback. The Bengals have the guy built for the big stage. The Bengals have the guy who is undefeated in win-or-go-home games, who has done it all year, and a team that believes in him, and a team that feels like a team of destiny to themselves. That matters. It matters here. It's mattered through this whole run. It's part of what has made this team feel different and special since week 7 in Baltimore. And I'm going to harken back to that. This has felt like the coronation of Joe Burrow. And I think Matt Stafford is prone to mistakes. Has made mistakes throughout this season in big spots that almost cost the Rams games. They've found ways to dig out of some of the chaos that he's and they have created. I don't know if it comes to a close game, that's the Burrow's game. A close game, and that's the Bengals game. They have created the big turnover. They've gotten the big play every single time. Why would this be different? I don't think this is going to be different. Bengals 19, Rams 17, McPherson from 45 at the gun, 4 field goals for Evan McPherson because of course, and the Bengals for the first time in their franchise history hoist the Vince Lombardi trophy as Super Bowl champions.
So do you have McPherson as the MVP then with 4 field goals?
No, still Burrow. Okay. It's still Burrow. It's Burrow will make all the plays to set those up. McPherson in the conversation without doubt. Yeah. But I still think it's Burrow. I still think he'll have a great game. I think he'll drive them consistently. I think they'll have some trouble in the red zone like they have for a while, and have to settle for some field goals. But, you know, we've seen Zach Taylor understand the dynamic of the type of game it's going to be. And play that and take the points when he felt like it was a take the points game. And we've seen him play a go for it when he felt like it was a go for it game. I think this is going to feel like a take the points game. It's going to feel like Denver, right? Vegas, some of these games, almost all the playoff games, Tennessee. It's going to feel like a take the points game. And I think that will end up in some field goals. And I think the Bengals defense will play well against the Rams and keep them genuinely sort of in check. And so a low scoring game feels right. Some field goals feels right. Burrow making the plays at the end to win it and McPherson at the gun just feels right. This feels like a team of destiny in that way.
Yeah, that's a great point about the way this game, because we both went really low. We both went under, and I wrote that story when the Bengals coached in the Senior Bowl. That Zach and Brian do this. They will grab a game book from a game that they think played out the way that their upcoming game is going to play out, and they will kind of do fantasy football for coaches. Well, they'll go through that game book and see, you know, on 2nd and 5 there was a 2-yard game. So okay, now you got 3rd and 2, and they will simulate the game and their play calls and what it's going to be in that situation. And if this does play out like that, I have this number in my Lou Anarumo story that's up today. In the playoffs, Bengals opponents have driven into the red zone in the second half 6 times, and they've yet to score a touchdown. This defense has just been really – they've only given up 1 red zone touchdown anyhow, but in the second half – they are blanking teams that drive down and get in the red zone. And you saw the huge stop at the end of regulation against the Chiefs. I feel like both kickers are going to play a pretty sizable role in this one. And as good as Matt Gay is, banking on Evan McPherson feels like the smart play.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way that these games have gone. The common thread in these Bengals games have all looked the same. And I think that will be the case in this one too. And I just can't get past of, you know, it just feels they've banked on turnovers. They've made turnovers the way they've won games, and you have a quarterback that's prone to them. That connection is what I just can't get past it over and over and over again. Anytime anybody asks me about this game or I think about the dynamic of it, that's the way it feels to me. All right, everybody. This has been fun. We've loved these game previews all year. It's been fun to talk about football games again. And it's been a good run, and we will continue to do it. Of course, we have our live room with myself, Jay, Jordan Rodrigue, Lindsey Jones, all breaking that down. Again, that'll be available exclusively as Athletic Audio Plus content on the Athletic Football Show feed, or you can listen to it live. And that's on Thursday afternoon. And so we have that for you. And then, of course, the walkout from SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles, myself and Jay wrapping up the Super Bowl with our final walkout of the year. And then we'll go from there, and we'll see what happens next. Maybe it's a parade that we'll be covering next week. Who knows? But all of that is to come. And again, if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, I like at this point, there's just so much incredible content up from across our entire staff. I'm just so proud to be a part of this team. And I've been so proud to be a part of this podcast with you, Jay, and our producer, Cam, who just did. You guys have just been just rock stars throughout this. And it's just been so much fun. I hope everybody has sensed how much we've enjoyed it. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Well, judging by every video, I know you are, but this has been just a treat this whole season to be able to do this. And I'm looking forward to the walkout on Sunday night from the Super Bowl. How about that?
It will be memorable one way or the other. And I'm looking forward to it too. And Paul is the Joe Burrow of this podcast. He is what drives this whole thing. And it has been awesome. Really fun year. Can't thank everybody enough for following along and interacting with us on Twitter and sending in your run past your boots and the growler bets and, get a lot of rest, people. It's going to be a long week until Sunday gets here. But I hope you guys all enjoy whatever the Super Bowl brings Sunday night.
Yeah, should be fun. Looking forward to talking to everybody on the walkout. So we will talk to you on Sunday night from SoFi Stadium. Enjoy the game, everybody.